Welcome to the Background Briefing podcast. This week, the barbecue stopper. Ian Townsend's report from July 2013 about a crippling virus and the aggressive mosquitoes that carry it. They're on the move and knocking at Australia's door. It's not malaria and it's not dengue. It's called chikungunya.
In amongst the mangroves next to the port of Brisbane on the shores of Moreton Bay, the federal government's mosquito police are on patrol. Angus Sly is checking traps to see if he's caught a particularly aggressive intruder.
This is one of our traps. So the mosquitoes at night will be attracted to the carbon dioxide coming closer, be attracted to the light, and as they come in towards the light, the fan will suck them into this holding container.
This trap is designed to mimic human breathing. It expels carbon dioxide and the fan circulates the air. To a mosquito looking for a blood meal, this trap acts just like its prey, and that's us.
As you can see, we got a few mosquitoes last night.
100 or so in there by the look of it. What sort of species do you think they might be, those ones?
Having a quick look at them, there's a few Aedes vigilax, which is a salt marsh mosquito. A bit hard to see in the light.
No albopictus?
Oh, I hope not.
Aedes albopictus is also called the Asian tiger mosquito, and no one wants to see it in these traps. It's one of the world's most invasive pests, a vicious biter that researchers are calling the barbecue stopper. The Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry has sentinel traps at 84 ports around Australia, and it's on high alert for the barbecue stopper. Angus Sly says once every couple of months, one or two of these mozzies are caught flying around a port.
Darwin has predominantly been the location where we've been getting most of our detections. Each year we seem to be getting at least one or two, sometimes up to four or five in Darwin alone. Our most recent exotic detection was in Cairns at the port there.
Several arrived in Townsville in a cargo of tyres. Others were spotted in a greenhouse in Melbourne. The Asian tiger mosquito has been spreading through Africa, Europe, the Americas and the Pacific. Its next stop is Australia, and if it slips past this thin line of traps, it could soon be stopping barbecues here. It could also start spreading viruses. At the moment, it's helping a nasty virus called chikungunya sweep across the arc of countries to Australia's north.
Chikungunya. Yan ang pangamba ngayon ng DOH o Department of Health. Parehong uri kasi ng lamok ang nagdadala.
May outbreak ng chikungunya sa bayan ng Patnohon sa Antique. Mahigit 300.
Hello, I'm Ian Townsend and welcome to Background Briefing. The chikungunya virus and the Asian tiger mosquito are a match made in hell, and they're knocking on our door. Increasingly, tourists returning from holidays in places like Bali and Malaysia are bringing the virus home with them. Barbara Rogers came home from Bali feeling very sick.
And I had this bluish red rash all over me. And it was on my legs and my body and my joints. My ankles were swollen, my wrists were swollen, my elbows, and at that time my hips. And it's like someone has thrown a hand grenade into a very healthy body and walked away to leave me to deal with it. It's bone shattering that you feel like every bone in your body is broken. You can't take anything. Every 4 hours I was on Panadols and Nurofen, and it didn't even touch the surface of the pain. I mean, if there had been a box, I would have put myself in it at some stage, you know.
Barbara Rogers, or Barbie Rogers as she was known when co-host of the 70s TV quiz show Great Temptation, is one of more than 70 people known to have brought chikungunya back since January. There's no vaccine or cure for chikungunya. Looking for drugs to treat it is Andrea Serbia from the Queensland Institute of Medical Research.
Chikungunya is a Makonde word. That's a native language of Tanzania. If you stand up and try to scrunch yourself into a fetal position with all your joints in your body bent forward, that's what it describes. He who is bent up, or that which is bent up. That describes the posture of somebody with chikungunya disease. All their joints hurt so much, they're tottering along with all their joints clenched up in a sort of fetal ball. So, yeah, not at all pleasant.
8 years ago, this unpleasant disease from Africa met up with that aggressive mosquito from Asia on an island in the Indian Ocean. The chikungunya virus mutated inside the mosquito, and the pair has been on a rampage around the globe ever since.
And those mosquitoes aren't transmitting dengue.
Gosh.
You know, so if you go
the QIMR is Jonathan Darbra, who studies mosquito biology.
One amino acid changed into another one, two carbon atoms to be precise, and now it spreads through this Albopictus mosquito quite well. And it's a mosquito from South Asia that happened to be in Africa, and this duo then swept through Europe. And so it's globalization at its finest. So viruses change, and people are moving around more. And so you're going to get all these new interactions of insects and viruses, or just new viruses that you haven't seen before. So I think we'll probably see a few more surprises, you know, down the line.
2 years after that surprising mutation in 2005, there was an unprecedented outbreak in Italy. Chikungunya's infected millions of people across India and Asia, and there are now outbreaks in New Guinea and the Solomon Islands. Last week, a state of calamity was declared in a town in the Philippines. The Philippines media is reporting spot fires of chikungunya across the country, mixed up with dengue. It's all a bit confusing because it's happening so fast. Dengue and chikungunya start out with similar symptoms: a rash, high fever, aches and pains. The same mosquito can spread them both at the same time. Dengue can kill, but chikungunya causes a debilitating arthritis that can linger for months. In Papua New Guinea, tens of thousands of people are infected. The PNG Institute of Medical Research is in the highlands town of Goroka, and its head of environmental and emerging diseases is Paul Horwood.
The outbreak here started towards the start of the year, and we're still getting a lot of cases here at the moment. There's still a lot of people present to the hospital because they're very concerned at these symptoms they feel, especially the arthritis, can be very, very painful, and people get very worried. And the hospital really was being overwhelmed by these cases of chikungunya.
What's it like at the moment?
We're still getting a lot of cases. At the moment, we don't have enough data to be absolutely sure that we are seeing a decline in cases.
It's a growing health risk for travellers, but most people heading overseas have never heard of this virus. The Director of Infectious Disease at the Austin Hospital in Melbourne is Professor Lindsay Grayson.
Every second day now on the internet, we have an alert system for any outbreaks around the world, and it's very clear that the sites where chikungunya is increasing is changing very quickly.
For years, Bali has been a popular holiday spot for Australians, and this is where a lot of people are being bitten by mosquitoes and bringing viruses back. Cases of dengue have been rising, but chikungunya is accelerating.
We're looking at any of these diseases where they have a relatively short incubation time that fits in with the flight patterns of travellers. And so for things which have this sort of, you know, 6 to 10 day sort of incubation period or even a bit shorter, this is the perfect thing where someone's away for a week, they come back, they're home in 6 to 8 hours from Bali, for instance, and then they're presenting a week later with this illness. So it's an important consideration for everyone, particularly GPs. And they now have to think is when they've got a fever and a return traveller from one of these areas, not only to think of malaria, because that's the thing that could kill you overnight, but also dengue, and to add to that now, chikungunya.
The trouble is it's not on the radar of most Australian doctors. Barbara Rogers got sick in Bali in March, and a doctor there diagnosed chikungunya. When she came back to Australia, the pain was so bad she went to hospital and told them she had chikungunya, but the doctors who treated her hadn't heard of the disease.
I was in overnight, and they did all these tests, and they kept coming back to me and saying, we can't find anything, we can't find anything, so we'll give you painkillers, painkillers. Then it got worse, and 4 days later, I collapsed, paralysed down the left side. And they rushed me into emergency again. and I took a photocopy of the doctor's thing saying what it was. Anyhow, it was interesting because I would say 9 out of the 10 doctors that came to see me had never heard the word before. Now, wouldn't you have thought they would have either got in touch with Bali or the doctor in Bali or infectious diseases? But they didn't attempt to do that. I was in for 11 days and a couple of doctors came back to me and they Googled it and they said, oh, we've never heard of it before.
Background Briefing contacted a number of people who've come back to Australia seriously ill with chikungunya, and they all have a similar story. Their doctors hadn't heard of it. Here's Lindsay Grayson from the Austin Hospital in Melbourne.
That's an important point because particularly, you know, if you think of the huge number of people who come back from Bali or Malaysia where chikungunya now is increasingly being reported, or India, there's an important lesson here because for GPs previously they would have, a patient who wasn't sick enough to go to hospital would just do dengue serology. Well, of course, that'll come back negative. So it's important that they think to order both tests.
Is there a chance that if it comes back negative for dengue, they're not quite sure what it is, the patient might be over their fever and rash, that they'd be sent home? Is there a chance that it's some cases aren't being diagnosed?
You know, I'm sure that's true, that some aren't being diagnosed. The question is, does it really matter? Well, it does, because it's always an important part of getting over these illnesses, because usually these people are pretty sick by the time we see them in hospital. It's good for them to know, well, look, actually what you had is chikungunya.
Chikungunya rarely kills, but it can put people out of action for months. They can have trouble typing, sitting, lifting, driving, holding a phone. It can be an economic disaster for families and even entire communities. That's what's been happening overseas. Professor Donald Shepherd is a health economist at Brandeis University near Boston, and he's speaking via Skype.
We studied dengue in other poorer communities, such as Cambodia, where people, if they were sick, they had to pay out of pocket for treatment. And the burden was quite substantial, pushing people in debt, forcing them to sell livestock and other major assets. And I would expect chikungunya, particularly in a poorer community, to have very similar devastating impacts.
That's what's been happening in Papua New Guinea as chikungunya spreads and a silent disaster unfolds. Paul Horwood from the PNG Institute of Medical Research.
A lot of these people are really on the borderline of being very, very poor and being able to feed their families and put food on the table, and having something like this can really tip them over the edge.
Paul Horwood's based in the highlands town of Goroka, which has a daytime temperature of about 25 degrees all year round. It didn't have many mosquitoes and rarely saw mosquito-borne diseases until the arrival of the Asian tiger mosquito. Now, Paul Horwood's seeing people in the streets crippled with chikungunya.
It's quite amazing. This arthritic symptoms that you see, you see people that are only 25 years of age walking around on a stick and limping on a stick because they can't walk properly. And it really has a very large impact, particularly in our workforce, people turning up to work and not being able to walk properly and things like that. And so it certainly has had a large impact on the country and also the workforce.
The strain of chikungunya that mutated in 2005 spreads with alarming speed. At the University of Queensland, Nigel Beebe studies mosquito evolution.
And that virus, the chikungunya virus that actually moves through Albopictus quite quickly, we call it quick chick, is actually now moving around the world. And this is what's moving through Papua New Guinea at the moment. So we, again, should be extremely aware of this because it's quite likely we'll be seeing it in the Torres Strait Islands.
It's the speed of quick chick combined with the aggressive daytime biting habits of Aedes albopictus that's making health authorities in North Queensland very, very nervous. When chikungunya broke out on Reunion Island in the Indian Ocean, 270,000 people, nearly a third of the population, got sick. There were 45,000 cases in just 1 week. Deaths from the virus are considered rare, but several hundred people died in that outbreak. As we heard, the Asian tiger mosquito, Aedes albopictus, is already in Australia, in the Torres Strait, but hasn't yet established itself on the mainland. There's another good vector of chikungunya already in North Queensland, around Cairns. A cousin of albopictus, called Aedes aegypti, is responsible for a rolling outbreak of dengue. Health authorities in Cairns have been on alert for chikungunya since two people with the virus came back from New Guinea in April. the concern isn't just for public health, but what an outbreak might do to the local economy. Chikungunya researcher Andreas Serbia.
If we get an outbreak here, of, you know, even a reasonably small one, the tourist cost could be very large indeed. We've seen with SARS in places like Hong Kong, the damage there was really not so much clinical. The damage was to the tourist industry. Foot and mouth disease outbreak in England, you know, yes, big damage to agriculture, but the cost to tourism turned out to be much, much larger. So yes, keeping on top of these things and being prepared and controlling them quickly and efficiently is very important for your economy.
It's not just a threat to Australia's top end. The Asian tiger mosquito would be right at home in Melbourne. It likes temperate climates and its eggs can survive frost. In Brisbane, there's already a colony of Aedes albopictus, but it's in a secure lab at Queensland Health. The entomologist studying the Asian tiger mosquito for Queensland Health is Andrew Vandenhoek.
You know, one of the things with Aedes albopictus is that it has this amazing capacity. Once it gets into a given location, it will just spread, you know, human-assisted transport, and has the potential to go down as far south as Sydney and Melbourne. And we've been doing experiments with the actual mosquito itself from the Torres Strait. You know, could it actually survive in Sydney or Melbourne? And our experiments suggest that it could.
Asian tiger mosquitoes were found flying around a greenhouse in Melbourne last year. They'd come in from China with lucky bamboo, an indoor plant that grows in jars of water, and had somehow survived three levels of treatment, including fumigation. The mosquito invades countries by stealth, and wherever it goes, from Chicago to Rome, it changes people's behaviour. Greg Devine is the head of entomology at the Cairns Public Health Unit.
I mean, interestingly, in my own experience in working with colleagues in Rome, where they have had incursions of albopictus, and albopictus is now very well established in that city, which is about a similar climate to Sydney, it has changed the way that people live their lives. I mean, obviously, Italians are very used to an outdoor lifestyle, but it has actually changed the numbers of people going through the gates at the botanical gardens and the local cemetery, and all the places that they used to traditionally go on a Sunday are now far less visited, because they just haven't had this kind of thing that comes and bites your hands and your face and annoys your kids kind of at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. That's not a mosquito they've ever been exposed to before. So it really will change people's behaviour.
People talk about being chased by this aggressive mosquito. When she became sick with chikungunya, Topaz Conway was on holidays in Malaysia.
I do remember the culprit, because I happened to walk into this part of the forest just in back of the huts where there was a pile of rubbish from the resort where I was staying. I was standing near that, looking at a particular flower on a tree, I think it was, and suddenly felt like I was getting attacked by an army of mosquitoes, and I ran, and they literally chased me back to my hut.
Before she fell ill, author Laura Jean McKay recalls the biting mosquitoes in Bali.
Because I've lived in Southeast Asia a fair bit, I'm fairly good with repellent. However, I was bitten through clothes.
You think they might have got you through the clothes because you'd had plenty of repellent on the exposed parts.
Yes, that's right. I usually put, you know, the DEET around my ankles and wrists and the exposed areas, but I had a lot of a few bites on my upper thigh through the sarong or the skirt I was wearing, so I think that's probably where it came from.
In the US, the Asian tiger mosquito has spread right up the east coast and is well established in New Jersey. In summer, this mosquito can hold people hostage inside their homes. Studying the mosquito behaviour is health economist Donald Shepherd from Brandeis University in Boston.
The time that people would enjoy having a barbecue or sitting in their backyard, relaxing or playing with their children, that's limited by this mosquito. So even when there's not a disease that's transmitted by it, which is so far the case in this part of the USA, there's still a burden for this mosquito.
The more people complain about this annoying mosquito, the more money local governments have to spend trying to control it. Professor Shepherd's been looking at the cost-benefit of all that expensive spraying. He's asked people in New Jersey how much they're prepared to pay to have one mosquito-free hour back outside in the garden.
They valued those hours at $10.88 per hour. So when you do the math and extrapolate that up, it amounted to $291 per person over one season.
the monetary value that people would put on being free of this nuisance mosquito.
How did they come to that particular figure of $10.88?
We used a technique in economics called willingness to pay. We asked people to hypothesize a price for one mosquito-free hour and asked if people would be willing to pay that much. And if they said yes, then through a kind of auction process, the amount was raised until one reached statistically the maximum amount that somebody was willing to pay. And the average over this sample turned out to be $10.88.
That's $10.88 that each household is willing to pay for one mosquito-free hour. If you think of a city with 100,000 people, that's $1 million for 1 hour in the backyard. Mosquito control doesn't cost that much, so a fogging campaign in this case is considered value for money. Professor Shepherd says because the Asian tiger mosquito has such a high economic cost, both as a nuisance and a disease carrier, it's well worth planning ahead for its arrival, much as people might plan ahead for a bushfire season.
When we try to take precautions to reduce the risk of a forest fire, knowing its devastating costs, in the same way by taking precautions on minimizing the kind of environments that promote mosquitoes, we reduce the risk that we have an outbreak that, like a fire, can be costly in terms of monetary cost and in terms of human cost.
In Queensland, local councils already spend about $10 million a year to control nuisance mosquitoes. That doesn't include the costs of fighting dengue in Cairns or combating the Asian tiger mosquito in the Torres Strait. Greg Devine from the Cairns Public Health Unit.
And so one of the things that we're looking at in the near future is to get a proper cost-benefit analysis of the problem so that we can at least then go to state and federal governments and the local councils and say, look, this is what it will actually cost if it becomes a major problem on the mainland. And with that kind of information behind us, then it's much easier to go and then ask for further funding. The other thing, of course, is the threat of an actual disease outbreak itself. At the moment, albopictus in the Torres is a nuisance issue and not a public health one, because so far it hasn't vectored any disease that we know of. But it's very likely that in the future it will. And of course, as soon as you actually have a real public health problem, then people's wallets tend to yawn open a little wider.
Outbreaks of chikungunya come with a high medical cost and lots of lost work hours. And there's a big social cost too. The director of the World Health Organization's Collaborative Centre for Arbovirus Research is John Askov, who's also a virologist at the Queensland University of Technology.
I think even more than the economic side is the social side. The disease is most common in the sort of 20 to 45 age group, and that's your childbearing age group. Now, if you're a mum and you're working part-time and you've got young kids and you can't open the fridge door and you can't turn a tap and you can't undo the Velcro on the shoes and all this sort of stuff, you know, your life is slower, it's more painful, and you've not got anything that you can show anybody to elicit sympathy. You know, you don't get big swollen joints or something. And you find that when you have sore joints, you lose mobility and muscle tone. So then anything you do tires you more quickly. So then you stop doing things anyway. And so you get this spiral of loss of fitness and depression and whatever else. And, you know, it's really hard to put a value on some mum trying to manage her household tasks in semi-constant pain, you know. And I don't know how you put a dollar value on that.
As John Askov says, it's people in their prime who are the hardest hit. People like Laura Jean McKay, who's 35 years old.
I did meet up with my 91-year-old grandmother, who's doing very well, but she does have arthritis. We met up yesterday for a cup of tea, and we were both walking in a very similar way. She's 91, and we had the same gait as we walked along.
This is why it's important that chikungunya is accurately diagnosed. It can cause arthritic pain for months. People and their employers need to know why they're sick and that they will eventually get better. Laura Jean McKay is an author and still has trouble typing. She developed a fever at a writer's festival in Bali in May and was told she had dengue. On the flight home, she had a rash as bright as sunburn and swollen hands and feet.
So when I came back to Australia, I went to a GP who again tested for dengue and it came up negative. And then I went to the infectious diseases ward in Melbourne and they proceeded to do a series of tests. Again, they diagnosed dengue, and I think that was really just so that I could start, you know, treating it. But with a bit of Facebook research, actually, other friends who lived in tropical countries suggested chikungunya, and eventually the Infectious Diseases Unit also diagnosed it as that.
So a friend on Facebook recognised your full body rash.
Yeah, I put up a photograph of this amazing rash, and a friend on Facebook said, looks like a dengue rash, but it also could be chikungunya, and that was the first time I'd ever heard of this, and also I think the first time my GP had ever heard of this. So it's not something that's widely known. In fact, a lot of people refer to it as chicken dinner because it's hard to pronounce.
2 days after being bitten and chased by mosquitoes in Malaysia, Topaz Conway came down with a high fever, a rash, and aching joints. When she arrived in Brisbane, she was so sick, she went straight to hospital, where she was told it was probably flu and to go home. The next day, she went to a GP.
I kept saying, but it's not the flu. I know it's not the flu. My joints hurt. There's something wrong here. And he pretty much did the same thing. Take 2 aspirin, go home. And if you're not better on Monday, come back. So by Sunday, I Googled my symptoms. And immediately what came up were 3 things. It was dengue, Ross River, or this chikungunya. It could have been any of the 3. So Monday, I took myself off to another doctor, asked her to test for dengue and Ross River. She wasn't going to, but then I insisted.
While waiting for the result, Topaz Conway's pain became so bad that she started asking around for a chikungunya test and found Andrea Serbia at the Queensland Institute of Medical Research.
And he immediately said, you know, it sounds to me like it's chikungunya. He said, in fact, I'll bet you a bottle of whiskey it is. So I said, okay, that's great, but what do I do? And he told me where to go to get the test done. And I did that, and sure enough, that's what it came back to be.
Chikungunya is like a souped-up version of Ross River virus. They're both alpha viruses, and they both cause a rash, fever, and arthritis that can last many weeks or months. If you've ever had Ross River virus, and 4,000 to 5,000 Australians are diagnosed every year, you'll know how painful that can be. Chikungunya is worse. And there's another local alpha virus that's had an unexplained jump in cases lately. The Barmer Forest virus. We've put some graphs on the Background Briefing website to show how the incidence of these mosquito-borne diseases has been rising lately. All these alpha viruses make people sick in the same way. Andrea Serbia.
There are very few viruses that cause this kind of protracted disease dominated by these rheumatic symptoms. And we think, why do they do that? Well, the answer is actually reasonably simple. The virus infects cells in the joints, and so the immune response tries to get rid of these infections, and that battle between the virus and the immune system causes inflammation, and that causes the disease.
The painful arthritis lasted 9 months for Topaz Conway. She describes what happened when her symptoms vanished briefly during a bout of food poisoning.
Suddenly I felt good, and it didn't matter that I had salmonella and was vomiting my guts out. I was absolutely ecstatic, almost giddy from not having the pain in the joints. So on day 5, when all the symptoms of salmonella went away, the pain came back. And that's sort of when I lost the plot and told the doctor, you can cut off both my arms and legs because I just cannot live with this pain. And I was dead serious at the time.
In Victoria, Laura Jean McKay still has arthritis 2 months after the infected mosquito bit her.
So yesterday I felt really arthritic and found it difficult to walk, and I dropped a plate and smashed it on the floor because I couldn't hold it. And then today, not so arthritic, but my feet are peeling and I feel quite nauseous.
What do you mean, the skin's actually peeled off?
The skin's falling off, yeah, the skin's peeling off. And that's the result of the rash.
Laura Jean McKay is in Melbourne, where so far there are no mosquitoes that could transmit chikungunya. If she lived in Cairns, as opposed to Melbourne, it'd be a different story. A cousin of the Asian tiger mosquito, Aedes aegypti, has already migrated to Cairns, established itself, and is now endemic in North Queensland. It's responsible for a dengue outbreak that Cairns can't seem to shake, and Aedes aegypti is also a really good vector for chikungunya.
Greg Devine is Director of Entomology at the Cairns Public Health Unit.
Certainly in Queensland we need to be alarmed, because just because we know this is where the viruses do very well. And virus replication is all to do with temperature, and it's in these parts of the tropics that the virus can really circulate quite fast. And one of the interesting things about chikungunya and albopictus is it's a very, very fast replication, much faster than we're used to dealing with the old Aedes aegypti dengue model. So that makes our job much, much harder. So we need to be looking very seriously for new interventions. And I say they are on the horizon.
Australia's kept albopictus off the mainland for more than a decade, but it came to the Torres Strait in 2004. It was thought to have arrived from Papua New Guinea, but DNA testing showed this variant of the mosquito came somehow from Indonesia. There are so many ways Aedes albopictus can get to the mainland that some researchers worry that it's already here. At QIMR is mosquito biologist Jonathan Darbra.
I think about that, actually. I think about that quite a bit. And one nice thing about albopictus is if it was well established, we would know it. It's not shy.
People would be on the phone saying,
"That's right.
What are these mosquitoes?"
And as soon as people complain, you know, the council guys will go check it out, and everyone in the business is aware of the threat. It might be that a couple, you know, maybe some eggs got through somewhere and there's some larvae. Whether or not that gets caught before it goes anywhere, or, you know, if it becomes the point of establishment, you know, there's no way of saying.
Another worry is that chikungunya could be spread in Australia even without Aedes albopictus or Aedes aegypti.
And the interesting thing about Aedes albopictus is they call it the Asian tiger mosquito because it's got a lot of stripes and things like that on it. But the most distinctive one is this stripe that runs straight down the back.
But its main distinction for the public would be just the fact that when you go outside you're being...
Yeah.
More viciously attacked than you would normally.
That's right, and particularly during the day, which you don't sort of tend to get much in Brisbane. Mm. You know, in North Queensland you would, because they have Aedes aegypti.
Yeah.
So it's very distinctive, you can see that.
Oh yes, you can see it's almost a silver.
Yes.
Silver stripe down the back.
It's quite a spectacular.
It is spectacular, isn't it?
Mosquito.
And there are sort of blobs of silver on its body and at its joints.
Queensland Health recently took a close look at Australian native mosquitoes to see if any of those could be a vector for chikungunya. It turns out that one of the best vectors is a common mosquito called Aedes vigilax, the saltmarsh mosquito, which we heard about earlier, caught in a mosquito trap at the Port of Brisbane. Queensland Health entomologist Andrew Vandenhoek.
One of those is Aedes vigilax, which is the main Ross River vector throughout coastal areas of Australia. Aedes vigilax comes from salt marshes, so, you know, there's times when you get, you know, above average high tides or above average rainfall, and you'll get plagues of these mosquitoes, and people definitely notice them, and certain suburbs are more at risk. So, yeah, there are a number, and there's even another domestic species called Aedes nodoscriptus. This is the one that if you're working out in the garden in the late afternoon heading into dusk, or you're out in the veranda having a drink after work, that's the mosquito that'll probably be hassling you there.
Researchers also worry about what will happen if the Asian tiger mosquito starts biting marsupials, which are the natural hosts for our native alpha viruses. Andrew Vandenhoek.
Marsupials are major hosts of Ross River virus, so the question is, could they be also hosts of chikungunya? And in all reality, we really, at this stage, don't know that. Having said that, humans are the hosts of chikungunya, so I think there's enough hosts here, potential hosts, that's for sure.
There's no vaccine and no cure for chikungunya, and no specific drug to treat it. Trying to make any new drug from scratch can cost a fortune and take years. Andreas Serbia is part of a team looking at treatments for rheumatoid arthritis that could also treat chikungunya in an outbreak.
The dogma some years ago was, oh, don't be stupid, they're really very different diseases. You know, one's an autoimmune disease and goes on forever. One's a self-resolving viral arthritis, you know, completely different. You know, you'd be nuts to think that there'd be some kind of similarity there. So we actually did the experiment. We got together with Emory University in the USA and we actually did a study trying to work out what the inflammatory signatures in the two diseases are. And we were really surprised. So, and in fact, the inflammation in both those have remarkable level of similarity. And that was an extremely surprising result for us.
But it illustrates that at least some of these drugs, we don't know which ones yet, that are being developed for rheumatoid arthritis, should also find application in the treatment of Ross River and Barmaphorus and chikungunya, etc.
There's research into new ways of attacking the mosquito too. In Cairns, a trial of a bacteria called Wolbachia is helping slow the spread of the Aedes aegypti mosquito and its ability to transmit dengue. The bacteria could also work with chikungunya inside the Asian tiger mosquito, but that research is still some years away. There are also new insecticides that could better help control Aedes albopictus, but they haven't been registered in Australia yet. How cost-effective the mosquito controls we have at the moment will be in controlling any outbreak of chikungunya is a question that bothers virologist John Askov.
And, you know, if we did get a big outbreak of chik in Cairns or something, there'd be an enormous political pressure to rush around and do all sorts of things, which in the long term might not have very much effect at all. And so, I think people need to maintain cool heads here. What's it going to cost us in terms of either morbidity or mortality? What's it going to cost us to prevent that? And is that a cost-effective use of our health dollar? And so, you know, while this is fascinating to me, you know, I'm not the health minister trying to balance a budget. And so we need to keep a sense of perspective in what we're doing.
From the perspective of someone who's had the disease, no price is too high to be able to treat chikungunya and kill the Asian tiger mosquito. Topaz Conway.
If hundreds or tens of thousands of people got this, it would mean people who couldn't work, couldn't lift their children. You can't lift things. And simple things like if a mother gets it and she can't lift her infant or, you know, I would drop things because literally my wrists would give out. Even getting up off the floor, if I sat down on the floor for any reason, there were times, you know, when I had to sort of crawl over to a chair so I could somehow get myself up off the floor. So it isn't a trivial thing if this were to break out in a major way.
Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Research by Anna Whitfeld. Technical production by Lila Schunner. The executive producer is Chris Bullock, and I'm Ian Townsend.